the very least to understand how to combine it with gravity, but also perhaps, you know, other reasons, just that we want some deeper understanding of what's going on and some deeper understanding of how to make sense of the underlying reality. So what I've assembled for you here is a distinguished group of panelists to address these issues, and in particular to have an opportunity to present some ideas and perspectives on what kinds of constraints we should take into account to guide us in considering ways in which we might generalize or deepen our understanding of quantum theory. So our panelists are Rob Speckens, Adán Cabello, Renato Renner, and Terry Rudolph. And the format will be 10 minutes for each panelist to present their case, present their points, followed by 2 to 3 minutes of rebuttal, and then we'll open it up to discussion with the audience. And if everyone thinks that's reasonable, we'll start. So Rob has volunteered to kick us off with his perspective. So Rob, please proceed.
Okay, thanks, John. So I think I'm going to use my time to give a sort of a bit of a broad overview on what I think some good policies are for if you want to generalize quantum theory. I trust these guys will maybe go into more specifics. But I hope at the end to say a few things about what I believe on this front. So I'm going to interpret this, so the question is, what are the constraints on generalization of quantum mechanics? So first of all, I take that to mean the statistical aspects of quantum theory. So we're not talking about, you know, the particular Hamiltonian we use, but the fact that it's Hilbert space over a complex field and systems combined in a tensor product. And that's sort of part of the abstract formalism of quantum mechanics. And I'm also going to assume that, you know, obviously if we have some experimental constraints that, you know, quantum theory was violated, that would clearly guide us to how to generalize it. But we're working in the absence of those constraints, so we're really talking about theoretical desiderata for our theory building of alternatives to quantum theory. So the first point I want to make is that I think there's a very reasonable and I would say prudent approach to this sort of problem, which is as follows. The first thing you need to do if you want to consider building a generalization of quantum theory is to situate it in a landscape of possible theories. So by that I mean, again, you know, not a landscape of possible Hamiltonians, but a landscape of, you know, ways that experimental statistics could be connected with preparations, for example, or just, you know, different ways the world could be. So you sort of need a framework for describing all the points in that landscape. And then the next thing you want to do is find some principles that will pick out quantum theory from that landscape. And you want those principles to be logically independent. And then finally, when you want to generalize quantum theory, you take one of those logically independent axioms, or two of them, and you vary them, and you see what comes out. If you don't follow that procedure, you're liable to come up with an alternative that just isn't a consistent theory at all, but you won't recognize it. So for example, if you just went to the textbook postulates for quantum theory, and you said, oh, okay, well, I'm just going to decide to change observables from being represented by Hermitian operators to something else, see what happens. Well, Gleason's theorem tells us there's a tight connection between representing observables by Hermitian operators and representing preparation procedures by density operators. And you can't just change one and not change the other and expect to get a consistent theory. So if you first started by saying, here's a set of logically independent axioms that give us quantum theory within this framework, then you'll be safe in varying them. You'll be safe from inconsistency. So the idea is that it's sort of best, in the project of generalizing quantum theory, it's best to precede that project by a project of reformulating quantum theory within some framework that describes the space of possible theories, reconstructing quantum theory in terms of finding principles that pick it out from that space. And then also, this will be my next point, is it depends sensitively on your interpretation of quantum theory. So this whole issue is not independent of interpretation. And the way I think interpretation is relevant is that it matters what category of thing you think quantum theory is. So what the space, the landscape of theories is going to look like really depends on what you think quantum theory is. So suppose you think that quantum theory describes physics. So quantum theory is like Newtonian mechanics. Schrödinger's equation is like Newton's laws. The quantum state is like a specification of a point in phase space. Then, you know, the framework of theories you're going to be working in is the framework of possible physical theories. So the primitive notions that you're going to be using to describe those theories are things like, you know, particles, fields, energy, causation maybe. And, you know, maybe you'll want this framework to be broad enough to include all the classical theories that we know of. And then the kinds of principles that you want to apply, are going to be principles that you think are reasonable for physical theory. So maybe continuity would be one of your principles, or maybe conservation of energy, or the action-reaction principle. You could take those as starting points for trying to pick out quantum theory from that set. And then if you're looking to generalize, you might say, well, you know, there's no reason for the evolution equation to be linear, so let's try making it nonlinear. That's a perfectly reasonable thing to do in this context. And then you might be led to collapse theories, for example. Or as another example, Anthony Valentini's version of Bohmian mechanics, where he has a distribution that's not the standard distribution, gives you predictions that deviate from quantum mechanics. Okay, so that's one possibility, if you think quantum mechanics is a physical theory. Another approach would be to say, let's characterize quantum theory as an operational theory. So let's just think of it as making, you know, predictions about the outcomes of experiments. So all the quantum state is a catalog of expectations of what to expect for measurement outcomes in each measurement. Your primitive notions are preparations, measurements, transformations. You now need a framework that can reproduce just classical probability theory, essentially. And this is often called the convex operational framework that a lot of people here and elsewhere have worked on. And this is actually well developed now. The kinds of principles that people are using, and you know, this is working out pretty well. There are many different sets of axioms now that can pick out quantum theory. So things like, you know, the fact that you can characterize a preparation just by local measurements. That's called local tomography. Or the fact that every n-level system looks the same from every other. And then there are some other principles that maybe Adon will talk about, which, for example, would answer the question, not just, you know, why are the Bell inequalities violated? You know, that kind of question makes sense if you're sort of thinking quantum theory as a physical theory. You know, the natural thing might have been to satisfy them. But from this operational perspective, you really want to know, well, you know, why aren't they violated more than they are? You know, why do we get precise quantum amount? So people have come up with principles that pick out the precise amount of quantum correlations, at least that are moving in that direction. So the kinds of generalizations you get here are things like you know, the sleep, free slit interference type phenomena, or there's a hierarchy of correlation types due to Nevesky's Baronio and Essain, which we can imagine the kinds of correlations we see in the world are not the quantum correlations, but these other correlations. Okay, and then finally, the third alternative that I want to talk about for, you know, what kind of theory is quantum theory, is that it's a generalization of a theory of inference. So this, you know, full disclosure, this is my own preferred view, that, you know, we should think of the quantum state as neither a physical state nor just a catalog of expectations, but describing our subjective theories of belief about something real. And if you're doing that sort of, taking that sort of approach, then the generalization project starts by casting quantum theory in a framework of theories of inference. So this is something that I think hasn't quite been well defined yet. You know, what is the landscape of possibilities for theories of inference? I think it's pretty clear that they should have certain features. So for example, you know, in a theory of inference, if learning variables B and C teaches me nothing about variable A, then learning B alone should teach me nothing about A. That strikes me as a very reasonable constraint that any theory of inference should have. And it's connected to strong subadditivity when we try to quantify how much information you have. Or the fact that inference, my theory of inference, should not care about the underlying causal structure. You know, if I look at classical probability theory, I do inference the same way across space as I do across time. Bayes' theorem does not change depending on the things to which I'm applying it to. That's also a constraint on a theory of inference. So step one would be reformulate quantum theory within this landscape of theories of inference. And then, you know, the sorts of principles that you would apply to try to pick out quantum theory would be things like Dutch book coherence, maybe the fact that if you have a causal mediary between two variables, then learning it will screen off these two guys. Or finally, the fact that there should be coherence between the physical theory underneath this theory of inference and the inferential theory, by which I mean observers in the world are obeying this physics, and they're using a particular theory of inference as sort of the most adaptive one for how to reason. It should, you know, the physics of the world may very well constrain what's the most adaptive theory of inference for them to use. You know, the theory of inference may not be a priori, it may well depend on the physics of the world you're living in, because the physics of the world determines how much you can learn about the systems around you and what sorts of inferences you can make. Okay, so in that case, you know, it's that whole program is much less developed, but to my mind, the sorts of principles we should apply to try to get generalizations would be Well, there's principles at the level of inference, which I told you about, and then there's principles about the physics. Like, so I think Reichenbach's principle, which says that every correlation should be explained causally, that's something that, for me at least, should be sacrosanct. I think that's a really good principle to start with. Or the symplectic structure of classical mechanics, that's not so clear, but I think there's reason to believe we can have that. And from things like Reichenbach's principle, you can get a kind, you can preserve what I would say sort of the spirit of locality and non-contextuality. So in my view, that there's locality and non-contextuality are really all about causal structure, and to my mind, generalizations of quantum theory within this approach will be generalizations that refer to the causal structure. So it'll be innovations on the way causation and inference are related in the future. So that's it for my summary. Is that 10 minutes? Am I out of time?
All right.
That's about right? Okay.
Thanks, Rob. I thought that was a great way to frame the discussion, and you get bonus points for using the title of the conference so well in your, your landscape perspective. So our next panelist is Adam Cabello, and please tell us your thoughts.
Okay. I will use Rob's introduction. Because basically what he's saying is that depending on your taste, depending on what you feel is quantum mechanics is, you will look for different issues. You will look for different answers. And well, he confesses he's in the third game. I would say that I'm between the second and the third game. But in any case, I really don't care about that. Yes, I ask you to reconsider the old question or the old observation of Richard Feynman. He said, okay, look, we have here special relativity. How do you derive the special relativity? Well, it's simple. Take these two principles. C is constant, physics is the same. You get it. Okay. Whatever your taste, whatever you're looking for. So far, what is clear is that in quantum theory, we are very far from that. Do we agree on that? Okay. So what I like you to have in mind all the time is this. I would define progress in this generalization of quantum theory in the sense of having a deeper understanding of nature. Okay. And for me, the problem we have it is very simple. We don't understand quantum mechanics. We cannot derive quantum mechanics from simple principles in a sense. So I will just try to review some recent attempts for some people and getting this. And especially in these two areas, operational theory and theory of inference. And on one hand, we have this line of research started by Lucien Hardy of trying to reconstruct quantum mechanics from a different set of axioms, different than the usual axioms in terms of connecting physics with the Hilbert space of modalism. And surprisingly, after Hardy, there are many other attempts, Tesla, Brugner, Drews, Massanis, Müller, Daliano, and co-workers end up with sets of axioms from which you can derive quantum mechanics as an operational theory, as Rob mentioned. So yeah, okay. But now, remember Feynman, do you really understand better quantum mechanics after this, any of these sets of actions? Oh, I don't. Okay, I really love this. I mean, you haven't have to teach quantum mechanics. I would prefer to use any of these axiomatic principles rather than the standard ones, but still, I'm not satisfied. So I should mention another approach actually started very long ago when Popescu and Brodnich just tried to answer a very simple question. And this question was, okay, we know that quantum mechanics and nature, we do have a violation of the Bell inequality, the closed Rogozhin Volt inequality. Can we invoke any physical principle to explain why the violation stops precisely at 2 square root of 2, the Zero-sum bound, and they have a conjecture, okay, maybe it's no signaling. But they came with an example in which you can violate up to 4 without violating no signaling. So the question remains. In this sense, we have a lot of progress in recent years, starting with the information causality proposal of well, actually started long before that, but ended with information causality in this paper by Marcin Pawlowski and others. And the funny thing is that suddenly, we have an explanation of this whole question. Okay, we can just, it's a very simple principle that gives this bound. But suddenly, another principles came, like the one, this one I really like, this macroscopic non-locality. Macroscopic locality by Navasquez. But I still see a problem here, or in any of these principles. On one hand, they are not general enough to apply them for all the situations in my knowledge. And on the other hand, I think it's clear that they fail to explain the whole set of correlations, even in the case of the closure or signal copying. They explain the maximum violation, but they cannot trace the bound of the whole set of quantum correlations. Now, there's another proposal, like using the uncertainty principle plus the particular form of quantum steering to derive this zero-sum bound, but I personally feel that this is a kind of circle, and if you're assuming quantum mechanics, you get quantum mechanics. So what I do suggest to make progress? Well, first of all, I'll find extremely sympathetic with the project of Popescu and Rolich. When you take it seriously in general, it is extremely more complicated than it seems, because they want to understand quantum non-locality. Quantum non-locality is not just this particular Bell-like quality, but any Bell-like quality. And for instance, if you take the second simplest Bell-like quality and I ask you, okay, what is the maximum quantum violation? Just give me the zero-sum bound of this quantum violation. And well, it is not known. We have a way to calculate it, but in practice, we cannot calculate it up to 5 digits. So it sounds very complicated to find a principle to explain something that we cannot even calculate easily. That's why my personal taste started with something else, which is, okay, even I understand the historical importance of the Bell experiments. They are connected to Einstein's idea that quantum mechanics is not complete in a particular way, and it are connected with that particular scenario. And this particular scenario involves a lot of restrictions. It assumes that you have composite physical systems, assumes that you have different observers, assume that you can do space-like separated tests, assume that you can prepare quantum entangled states. But come on, be honest. We do have quantum mechanics even without any of these ingredients. So imagine you are in this very small wall in which you are alone, there are no more observers. Maybe you cannot even distinguish particle 1 from particle B, but you still have quantum mechanics. My guess is that you should be able to explain this quantum mechanics without these ingredients. That's why I move in a different direction. The first time I heard about information causality, well, the first time I talk about information causality to Marcin Pawlowski, I asked him to, okay, can you give me, using information causality, the maximum quantum violation of the Kliashko inequality? The Kliashko inequality is not a Bell inequality, an inequality involving commuting measurements in quantum mechanics on a single Q-truth. In a sense, is the equivalent or the simplest form of quantum contextuality. The simplest physical system for you in which you do have quantum contextuality is a Q-tree that was found by Koch and Specker and Bell long ago. And if you ask, okay, what is the simplest Bell-like inequality which is violated by quantum mechanics? The answer is the Klyashko. And for the Klyashko inequality, you have exactly the same situation as for the Bell inequality. You have a classical non-contextual bound, you have a violation, and then you have a gap in which more general theories can give you, in principle, more contextuality that you have. So I asked this question, and then I said, well, I actually would like to have the answer to a more general question. I give you any non-contextuality inequality, any of them, even any Bell inequality. Well, I would be happy having a single principle telling me the maximum quantum value of any of them, not just this, this, or this. Okay? And what would be your reaction, what you learned about quantum mechanics, if it starts to happen that the answer is very simple? And this principle is something that can be formulated the following way. The sum of the probabilities of events, propositions, that are pairwise exclusive, that cannot happen at the same time, is bounded by one, and that's it. Imagine for a moment that this is the answer. Imagine that you can recover all possible bounds of quantum mechanics from this. What you learn? Well, I personally learned that, well, I suspect that this is the case, first of all. And secondly, my reaction is, what? I mean, quantum mechanics, you're saying basically that quantum mechanics is a kind of trivial probabilistic theories. I mean, yeah, well, that's my feeling. That's my feeling. So my point here is that, and this is really my point, in facing up the problem of generalizing quantum theory, we have to be very honest. We have to recognize that we still don't understand at many different levels, many different senses. We don't understand quantum mechanics. So before going beyond quantum mechanics, it's better to understand.
That's it. So first wide one theory, and then what else can we have, right? Mm-hmm. Thank you. So our next speaker will be Ronald Rand, so please share your thoughts with us.
Okay, I would like to add an aspect to this question of generalizing quantum theory or seeing quantum theory as part of, let's say, a larger framework of theories. And by adding one aspect that, as far as I can see, hasn't been mentioned by you. And in order to illustrate that additional aspect, I would, as a kind of example, briefly go back to the theorem that I presented yesterday and then tell you how we can kind of circumvent this result that could be perceived as a no-go result. So just to briefly remind you, the statement that I showed you yesterday was a statement about or referring to the predictive power of quantum theory. And essentially, the idea was to show, would of course go beyond that, but to kind of show a no-go result, saying that we cannot increase, we cannot hope to get a theory with better predictive power, provided the theory satisfies certain axioms. Then, of course, the question is whether we want to fit up these axioms or not. And the axioms, or the assumptions, was essentially, and there were two. One of them was that this extended theory should still reproduce what we know about quantum theory, so it should be compatible with all the experiments we have done so far. Should this extended theory have a different behavior if we kind of reduce it back to quantum theory? That was one of the assumptions I made. And the other assumption I made was something that I call a notion of free choice, and it was, I should stress, a notion of free choice. One may have different notions of free choice. It was a notion of free choice defined relative to some chronological structure that I introduced. And somehow this notion of free choice was based on the idea of saying that we can make choice, or if choice is free, if it's independent of things that pre-existed, where one has to impose a certain definition of what pre-existed means. Okay, now on these assumptions, there's a theorem that proves that you cannot hope to get make better predictions than quantum theories. In some way, it looks as if there's now the following two possibilities. Either we just give up the hope that there is a theory that kind of goes beyond the predictions of quantum theory, that's fine, that's one possibility. Of course, the other possibility is to just question the assumptions that I made and said, and for example, say that this free choice assumption that I introduced is maybe too strong, there's maybe a weaker notion of free choice, or maybe we give up free choice. But I would now come to a kind of third possibility, which we could take, And this third possibility is to question the whole framework in which this question was formalized. And this now also applies to things that have been said here before in this panel. And so the summary of the whole thing would be to say that in all these frameworks, we always focus on the descriptions of values that are ultimately classical. So at the end, we are talking about classical outcomes. That's, for example, what I did in this theorem that I was mentioning before, that I was saying we make predictions about outcomes of measurements. And the predictions are classical, the outcomes of the measurements are, of course, classical, as I'm talking about measurements, and also the additional variables on which these improved predictions may be based on were classical. Now, in some way, if we now look at quantum information theory and look what we have learned there, then we have somehow learned that representing information classically is not the most general thing we can do. So if you assume for the moment that quantum theory was the correct theory, even then it's clearly restricted to represent information we have about the world in a classical manner. That's what quantum information essentially told us. And just then to illustrate that point, that just I had a conversation during the break where I mentioned this example. So assume that we have information about the steam part. Now there are different ways to describe the information we have about the spin particle. So one way would be to write down the density operator of this spin particle. But now if we give up the standard assumption that our information about the spin particle has to be classical, which it is, if I write down the density operator, the density operator is a classical object, then I may actually also consider a situation where the knowledge is another spin particle I have in my brain, which is just entangled with this. Of course, we don't usually think in that way because we assume our brain is not quantum mechanical, but in some way the point is that in principle it's conceivable to have a theory where the knowledge one has about the objects we are talking about are themselves quantum, or more generally, are themselves described in the language of that extended theory. And that's just essentially what consistency would force us to do. So if you have a theory which is more general than classical, then you know that in this more general theory, the way information may be represented, or there may be a more general notion of information. And at the end, physics is in some way, at least partially, a theory of information, I think that. So what Rob said. And so we shouldn't restrict ourselves to a theory of information which is itself a classical theory of information. So let me illustrate this maybe with another aspect that has been considered in physics. There's the uncertainty relation. And assume now for the moment that we were always fully quantum agents in the world, that our brain wasn't classical. So in that case, you would probably never have written down an uncertainty relation. Because in that case, it would have been very natural for us to think in the following way about, let's say, a spin particle. So we have, now talk about spin particles, you can translate that position of momentum if you like. So let's assume we have this spin particle. I have another, let's say, two-level system in my brain, which is fully entangled with that. And if I'm fully entangled with that, I would probably, if I'm a quantum agent, see that as the case where I have full information, because that's clearly full information I can have about this spin part. But if I have now full information in that extended sense, then indeed there is nothing missing, so there is no uncertainty left. For example, if the spin particle now undergoes something that we call in our classical picture a measurement, I could predict the outcome with certainty, whatever the measurement is. So there is no uncertainty in this full quantum picture. So the fact that there is an uncertainty relation could be seen as somehow a consequence of our implicit assumption that the knowledge we have about the world is restricted to being classical knowledge. And if we give up that restriction and say we include quantum knowledge, there is no uncertainty. So this is just another way of illustrating my point that we are actually working always with a kind of implicit or mostly implicit assumption that the knowledge we have when we describe physics, and maybe also if we describe physical laws, are classical. So now, it's essentially, to finish this short thing, what I would propose is the following, that if you think about more general theories, then we should, at the same time as we generalize like from classical to quantum or from quantum to more general things, also always generalize our notion of having information about that theory. So we should always be consistent in the sense that the information or the description, the handling of the information about the theory should be described within the theory itself. So this is maybe mostly clear if I talk about quantum theory. So as we talk about quantum theory, I would like to propose to describe the information we have about physical objects as quantum objects themselves. Okay, so that's essentially the initial point that I wanted to make. I'm not saying that this will, that this will necessarily resolve, let's say, this point that, or these no-go theorems, but I want to stress that the fact that this is a point that has been often ignored in many of the approaches, which from the beginning kind of assume that we're talking about classical objects. And I don't want, that's my, now my personal opinion, to restrict the way we talk about physics just because we as human beings are kind of mostly classical computing devices.
All right, thank you. Alright, Terry, so last but not least, would you like to share your ideas with us? Also,
sure.
Renato, could you move the microphone to close
for
Terry?
Yeah, so I guess what I'm going to say is going to touch on bits and pieces of what everyone says. So, I think that at least when Joe sort of posed this to us, the original question was like, what sort of generic principles are useful in order to try and limit extensions of quantum theory? And I think that my first, the thing that makes me uncomfortable about that is that even for the principal theories we have, things like relativity, I'm uncomfortable with the principle of relativity as actually giving me proper understanding of what's going on in relativity. You know, when I think about length contraction when this pen goes past me, I actually do think like Lorentz and Fitzgerald. I think, you know, electromagnetism governs the forces in this pen, and length contraction is real because I know something about what's really going on in the physics of this pen. Yes, the principle of relativity is useful, but, you know, I think like Bell, for example, I think that my understanding comes from something more than just a principle. So I guess I would say I'm a hardcore realist. I want a story, what's going on. I want to know something about a narrative, you know, that sort of underpins the weirdness that we see in quantum theory. And I think the weirdness that we see and the reason our narratives are so strange is that all our interpretations are couched in space-time. We are creatures that, for whatever reason, have evolved to think of position and time and so on as useful variables to describe the world. And, you know, I think my sort of overall viewpoint is that that could just be the red herring that Bill was talking about. You know, maybe space-time is just a red herring as far as quantum mechanics is concerned. Maybe it's, you know, maybe what we're seeing are kind of epicycles. Things look complicated because the degrees of freedom we're using are just too anthropocentric. So, you know, you can then turn around and say, well, how could you possibly go any further? You know, what else can you do? And I think that's where the perspective, the sort of information theoretic perspective, might become useful. And the only argument I can give in favor of that comes from classical thermodynamics. So I think everyone should read James's paper on information theory and statistical mechanics from 1957. Because the perspective you get in that paper is that most of the laws of thermodynamics are just laws of how we reason in the face of incomplete information. And yes, we then apply those laws to specific variables and specific situations, but actually most of them are just information theoretic in nature. And so it's very difficult to say, how can I come up with a narrative of the world independent of space and time and so on? But you could say that a similar situation, in this alternative history, could have faced the people who were trying to understand thermodynamics. Okay? They, imagine a world in which there were no indications that there was anything wrong with classical thermodynamics, so there was no problem of specific heats or anything. And we had all these laws of thermodynamics, and they're all couched in terms of variables that we think are important: pressure, volume, temperature, magnetization, entropy, and so on. And then people sit there and they try and come up with a story as, they get some clue that, well, maybe there's a deeper theory explaining why our steam engines work. And they then try and come up with a narrative in which the variables they use, their whole description, degrees of freedom, they say, well, I'm going to assume that there's these things called atoms, and each atom, contributes, it has a pressure, and it has a volume, and it has a temperature, and it has an entropy, and those are the degrees of freedom of an atom, because those are the degrees of freedom that are relevant for how I use this theory. And then they try and derive laws of thermodynamics in that way. I mean, I've never tried it, but I presume you also get very strange stories, because the actual narrative has got nothing to do with those degrees of freedom. And so, it's difficult to imagine how can you go beyond quantum theory and then drop completely the notion of space and time. But if you followed a James sort of approach, you would have actually been able to make progress, even if you hadn't correctly identified what the right degrees of freedom were in that classical thermodynamical situation. You would have been able to make some progress and just say, assuming there do exist some underlying set of hidden variables in that case, you would have gotten somewhere. And I think that that's the sort of program that I'm, unfortunately forced to engage in, because all the other programs I've ever tried just haven't worked.
Of course, there's an attrition then.
Yeah.
Are you guys all chomping at the bit to rebut each other, or maybe we can open up for a round of questions from the audience first? Is there a preference?
I'd like to say, but...
Okay, Rob, go ahead.
Let's pick up on the Bernardo point. So I'd like to point it out regarding what you might call quantum agents. So it's likely that, we don't have the capacity to coherently store quantum information, but you could imagine some agent out there who could. And then you could ask, well, what theory of inference would be appropriate for them to apply? And so you could definitely add another category, maybe quantum theory. What is quantum theory? Well, maybe it's the theory of inference that a quantum agent would use. And we're classical agents trying to apply this theory, but what inherently it is, it's the theory of inference for quantum agents. But you sort of said, and because of that, there's ways out of, no-go theorems, such as the one, potential ways out of no-go theorems. And I think that's actually something to useful to bear in mind whenever thinking about generalization of quantum mechanics. That I think it was Bell who said that when no-go theorems demonstrated the lack of imagination. So I think in all of these things, once you've sort of set out your, say, logically independent axioms, or once you've set out a set of assumptions from which you derive a no-go theorem, I mean, typically there's always some implicit assumptions in the background, and usually they're the interesting ones. And so my view is that it's better to not be very permissive with the principles that your generalization violates, right? So there was a time I used to work on modal interpretations of quantum mechanics where you would throw out locality, throw out determinism, throw out reductionism, throw out the action-reaction principle. Like everything that you might have thought could be a principle is all gone. And you can make some progress that way, but in a sense, I think the more interesting project is trying to hold on to a lot of these principles that have previously shown their worth, and maybe try to find some implicit assumption that's less obvious to deny, and see if you can make that sort of project work. Which is, I think, partly what you're saying is.
Any other pressing responses?
I mean, I don't have to add anything to that. You essentially say for that. I agree with what you said. A very nice summary of what I wanted to say.
All right, so we have maybe too much agreement amongst our panels.
So I would like to ask the panelists, I don't know if I missed this point, but they are talking about generalizing quantum theory, and it seems to be that that, in some sense, is the goal, but for me, at least, the goal is to replace it for something that can be understood. As you were saying, we don't understand this theory, and the point in which I disagree is that you say, well, we should stop looking for other theories until we understand this. That may not be a good path if this one is not understandable. You may want to construct a theory that you can understand. Replace the theory, but one that you can understand. I don't think there is, in some sense, the motivation for generalizing the theory. Of course, one may want to know where does the theory fit within the class of the possible theories, but I think the most pressing reason for looking for something else is because this one we don't understand, and I'm convinced it's not understandable. It's not possible to understand it. So what's your reaction?
By understanding, I mean something very simple. I mean, I don't want to understand everything. I want to understand this, 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 and this. For instance, I want to understand the maximum violation of this. As a starting point, I think here we should agree on this, that, okay, you have a theory with vectors that predicts these kind of correlations, and some may give you this maximum correlation here for this experiment that is very unclassical, but you go to the lab, you test it, you get exactly this number. Progress is, okay, quite this number. For any generalization you're looking for any kind of knowledge you're looking for, the fact that there is a principle that gives you this number is a progress. Call it re-understanding quantum mechanics or looking for a new theory. That your new theory should respect this, and the fact that the principle singles out exactly this is a fact. And by understanding quantum mechanics, I mean, remember my almost last example is, okay, imagine this is correct. Imagine that you get a bunch of extremely trivial principles and you recover the statistics of quantum mechanics. Yes, without interpretation, just the numbers. You recover from this, just the numbers. Now, I understand your search, a new theory that replaces quantum mechanics. But it might happen, and that was my point, that this theory doesn't exist at all, this new theory. And what we have is quantum mechanics, and you cannot get any more predictive theory. You cannot give anything that predicts anything different that you get from quantum mechanics. Maybe you're looking for something that doesn't exist. What I'm saying is, forget about this. Okay, I'm not happy with this quantum mechanics. I want to replace it with something else. But you have to replace with something else in agreement with the experimental facts. I'm just about, do you look for physical principle explaining the experimental facts beyond quantum mechanics? That's exactly the point. I'm saying, okay, look at this nice number you get from quantum mechanics. I get the same number just from this principle.
May I answer? I mean, you now said understanding quantum mechanics means, for example, understanding the maximum violation of the PR book or how noisy a PR book has to be. Now, I think there's also a danger in that. I think the PR box or the study of PR boxes has led, of course, to many very interesting results and very interesting insights. However, if, like, there's also many unnatural things we assume. I mean, there was this classicality of the inputs and outputs that I mentioned before, but there's also another thing. For example, in the PR box, we model a quantum experiment with just two choices of a measurement. Now, if instead Pascal Broglie had defined the PR box by saying, let's assume the inputs are actually continuous, there are some angle, maybe corresponding to the equator of the block sphere, then it would have been, I mean, then what you get is something which is more like corresponding to the so-called chain pair inequalities rather than the normal pair inequality. And in that case, there will be no gap between the maximum violation where you get, let's say, that you can get with that box compared to the maximum violation you get by quantum theory.
Mm-hmm.
So just this gap, which caused so much work about explaining, was just in some way caused by the fact that the input space was restricted to two possible values. And if they had defined for a continuum, this question wouldn't have arrived. So I would now maybe argue a little bit provocative. This question is about understanding quantum mechanics in terms of the validation of a peer box is a kind of unnatural question that just arose from the fact that for some reason, at some point, Popescu and Rolle divide inputs to be binary.
Okay. All right, this is partially technical. But you don't need to continue this continuous behavior to have exactly this kind of stuff. There are quantum correlations in which the quantum number, the quantum violation is exactly given by the principle also. I mean, basically the message is that you have exactly the same behavior you have in the what's called
chain
Bell inequalities, Brownstein cage Bell inequalities. Okay, in which when you have the limit of infinite, the gap is
arbitrarily
small.
Okay.
But the gap between quantum and classical, but also the gap between, I mean, that's the point, that's one problem there, that in that sense, the gap between, you have two gaps. You have the local gap, the quantum, I mean, the local limit, the quantum maximum, and the no signaling. And the problem I have with that example is that as you go for more and more, you wrote this. So everything collapses into the same. Okay. My point is that even without continuous number of inputs, you have situations in which you have this. You have the classical local thing, you have quantum, and quantum is exactly equal. You still have the gap. Okay, and this is both the quantum and no signaling, if you wish. But okay, I understand this seems to be imprecise, but my point is, no. I can give you an explanation of all. I mean, an explanation of the Ramsey case, an explanation of the situations I mentioned. So I don't see any particular strong assumption in PR, well, in the Bell scenario. You have binary inputs, binary output is nothing. Actually, what surprised me, and honestly surprised me a lot, is that we've been playing with the PR boxes for a long time, and suddenly PR boxes can be discarded for a bunch of absolutely simple principles. So it's like nobody noticed this before, and we are saying this. They're violating basically everything. We were playing as theoretical objects. And my objection is, okay, why are we so interested in these theoretical objects which are not natural? You cannot build them in a lab. Yes, explain me the what you can build in. Now I can explain why I cannot produce. I can explain why I can just reach here. So I don't see any danger in this approach. And at least I really feel this a legitimate question in which I would expect to have an agreement that is a scientific interesting objective. Maybe it's...
All right, well, after that, so is there another question?
Just want to confront this problem. When I took particle physics, quantum theory, special relativity, sorry, special relativity. And the standard model is remarkably successful. I remind you that the magnetic properties of the electron can be calculated in six decimal places. Now, as far as I know, no experiment has ever contradicted quantum mechanics in more than 80 years. Just take the Copenhagen interpretation. So I calculate, I take fine as a discussion. So I have this question. Let's envision the possibility scenario that no one ever does an experiment that violates quantum mechanics. What would that tell us? Why are we trying to generalize the theory? How would we confront this fact in the future, over the next 80 years?
John, this is a question on my mind as well. It's funny that we're all in this room wondering about quantum mechanics when it's the most empirically well-verified theory in the history of humanity. And so what if it continues to be that way?
You have to be careful. You can't falsify. If by quantum mechanics you just mean vectors in a field of space and projectors, then all experimental data is the expectation value of some vectors in the field of space with projectors. So already just to even say violate quantum mechanics, of course, you need to add other assumptions, assumptions like the tensor product structure, that this measurement is described by, you know, tensor product of this with this. I think, you know, a very deep question is, why does canonical quantization work, which is ultimately sort of where we get the Hamiltonians that can then compute the sort of G minus two of the electron and so on. But I would be happy if we never falsify quantum mechanics, as long as we get an understanding or a story for it that makes sense. I think that you can see, I mean, people here all advocate various different ways, and you go to a typical foundations meeting and you get even more ways of trying to make sense of quantum theory just as it is. And you can say, well, that's not a useful endeavor, and in which case you shouldn't go to foundations meetings. But, you know, I think that's essentially what we do in science. We don't care really about can we predict the next decimal place of such and such an experiment. We care about understanding what's going on in the world. That's what
we're talking about extending quantum mechanics.
We're trying to say
that's going beyond what we want.
Extending our understanding, not necessarily. That doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have some predictions which violate.
So it seems to me your question is a good question, maybe as a response to the first speaker's question, that if you think that we can't make sense of quantum theory, therefore we must generalize it in order to have any kind of theory that actually makes sense, then if you don't find any violations of quantum theory, maybe you have a problem because you have this theory that doesn't make sense and you don't have any alternative. But if you think that that's, you know, not the primary motivation for trying to generalize quantum theory, so what I was describing was more a program wherein, you know, step one, understand quantum theory by situating it in a landscape of theories, finding principles that imply it. And my view is that if you achieve that and you do it well, you will sort of get an interpretation coming out of it for free. And then step two would be, okay, let's see if there's some room for alternatives. So in that sort of program, if you found no violation of quantum theory, then, you know, you just lop off step two of the program and say, well, you know, we need to formulate in quantum theory in a way such that we can pick it out from the landscape by some interesting principles and thereby understand it.
Is there anyone who wants to follow up on that topic?
This is directly, I have a couple of other questions, but I'll confine myself for the moment to the one that was brought up by the last speaker. Look, if, you know, like several people have said, it depends what you mean by quantum mechanics, but if what you mean by quantum mechanics is a claim that that the world is described by a vector in a Hilbert space, and that vector invariably evolves in accord with the Schrodinger equation or with some relativistic generalization of the Schrodinger equation, then what von Neumann was trying to tell us, what Schrodinger was trying to tell us, what Wigner is trying to tell us, is that exactly the opposite of what we said is true. That is, that there is not so much as a single experiment in the history of the world that has not violated quantum mechanics, because every single one of them has had a determinate outcome, and it's a theorem that you can prove from the two postulates I just cited that these experiments shouldn't have determinate outcomes, okay? So it isn't, it's as opposite as it could be from it's being the case that no experiment has ever violated quantum mechanics. No experiment has ever failed to violate quantum mechanics, okay? And look, this expands out into a slightly different question that I had for the speakers. I'm puzzled. There's a lot of ponderous talk here. You know, before we're rushing on to modify quantum mechanics or this or that, before we're rushing on to think we can solve the measurement problem or something like that, we've got to slow way the hell down. We've got to understand what quantum mechanics is. We've got to locate it in a space of theories. We've got to come up with some simple postulates from which it can be derived. Then maybe once we're there, we'll be able to see dimly but well enough a way of approaching these other problems and so on and so forth. Look, somebody who takes this position, it seems to me, needs to have some kind of a response to the kind of claims that you've been hearing here for 2 days, that there are extremely simple solutions to this problem, okay? That we've got some theories on the table now, okay, that can make perfect sense of quantum mechanics, perfect standard, scientifically realist sense of quantum mechanics, without figuring out how to be non-classical observers, without being able to locate the theory in a larger space of theories, without giving up our notions of space-time or so on. We've got solutions right on the table. What the hell do you think about those?
All right, this is great. That's a great question. There's a certain tension here in the universe. So I'm just going to put off the topic that we should hit head on. Diametrically opposite
points
of view.
Right.
Okay.
And so I'm going to let Rob start.
All right, Dave. As I see it, and I get asked this question frequently, so I'll just sort of give you my personal response to this. You know, why am I not an Everettian or a Collapsican or any of the alternatives?
Or a right.
So the way I see it is that we need to think of it this way. Here's an analogy that, you know, on the one hand, I have to choose between a house which is finished. So by that, I mean the Everett, the Bowman, or the Collapse views. It offers a full interpretation of quantum formalism. Or an unfinished house, which is a research program that doesn't offer a full interpretation of quantum formalism. But to my mind, there's a difference between these two houses in terms of the foundation. So I think that your finished houses are built on bad foundations.
Say something
about
that.
And my unfinished house is built on good
foundations. But say something about the first point.
Produce
a critique of the foundations
okay,
that these things are built on.
So we could have a long discussion about the problems of particular interpretations that are on the table today.
Right.
But that wasn't what convinced me personally to go for the unfinished house. What convinced me personally was that there was sort of an alternative view on what category of thing a quantum state is, that was a different view from what was held in all these perspectives. And the evidence for that, I think, is a long list of it. So if you didn't know anything about quantum mechanics, and I said, okay, you know, we're gonna play a game, and your job is gonna be to figure out what category of thing this mathematical object I'm about to describe to you is. And the choices are, it's either an ontological thing or an epistemic thing, ontic or epistemic. And so what we need to do, I mean, there are features of entities that, to my mind, are characteristic of their nature. So a space of epistemic states, characteristically for a composite, is the tensor product of the epistemic space states of the components, because the joint distributions are not just the product distributions, but the correlated ones as well. Whereas in an ontological theory, the space of possible physical states for a composite tends to be the Cartesian product of the state spaces of the components. So that's a distinction between epistemic things and ontic things. Another thing that's characteristic of epistemic things is if I have two probability distributions and they overlap, I cannot distinguish them with certainty. Whereas with ontic things, typically I can. I cannot clone probability distributions that overlap because I can't just generate, you know, if I send you a signal and it's a noisy channel, you can't just arbitrarily kind of get more information out of that channel. You just got the one copy. And I could go on, and I've got a list of, you know, 30 things. And now I say, you know, without knowing anything about quantum mechanics, let's see what quantum states are like. Oh, they combine by tensor product. They can't be discriminated with certainty.
They can't be cloned. And I go through the list, bam, 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 bam. They fit the epistemic category. So my response to you is I choose the epistemic foundation because it makes such better sense of the features we see of quantum states than the object foundation. And it doesn't move me that your house is finished because I don't think it has a solid foundation.
But that seems, but it's the last point that seems to be the crucial one. That is,
right.
That and it's the last point that oddly you said, I don't want to discuss that because that's not really what convinced me. Okay.
So which
part? I see that your houses are finished, but I don't like the foundations. Okay. And I said, good, produce a critique of them. And you said, that's not really what interests me because what impressed me about the other view was its positive aspects, not the negative aspects of these finished houses. Okay. Mm. Now look. If there weren't finished houses standing right next to the one that you guys are in, think of yourselves as in the very early beginnings of trying to build, everything you say would be impressive and seductive, okay? But it really does seem like if there are finished houses standing right next to it, okay, that you can move into right away, as it were. You want to say something. Okay, which I was disappointed that you just refused to say about why you think those houses are in danger of falling down.
Sorry,
the minute you walk into
it. I mean, it was implicit in what Rob said, that the ontic assumption shares no analogy.
No. He was saying positive things.
Let me make another analogy. I mean,
okay.
It's,
now, you've got to produce a critique of the foundations.
I mean, I could give a long story about...
Give it!
No, I won't because everybody's heard that story before. So I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to say
please.
Instead. No,
give
just,
a little of it.
No. I wouldn't be saying anything you didn't already know.
But
anyways,
I don't know.
But the point is this.
Yeah.
And it seems to me this conversation is like, you've got the horse and carriage. And you say, Rob, we've got a great mode of transportation. It's the horse and carriage. And I say, well, it's got some problems. We've got shit all over the streets. And you say, I've got a plan for fixing that problem, and we're going to get people, and they're going to be on a cycle,
right.
Blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And I say, I've got this thing called an automobile I just invented.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to discuss with you the problems of the horses and all that. I'm just going to tell you how much better the automobile is. And you say, no, Rob. You need to tell me what's wrong with my horse and carriage. You need to provide a critique. I say, yes, I could do that, but why don't you just get in my car?
Your car is there.
That's why
you're running.
The foundation is there. I'm talking about the relative merit of the foundation.
The
foundation that criteria is permanent. Right, so John Bell pronounces inequalities. Go and do an experiment, check it. So for you, what is the experiment that tells me that I live in an epistemological as opposed to ontological point of view? It's just maths you talk about. What's the experiment that tells me?
Well, I wouldn't say it's just maths.
Right.
It's a conceptual issue.
No, but that means conceptual. I want an experiment.
Okay. So my response to that is, wait till the research program is done. And if it's successful, there will be many experiments. I don't think you could say of any research program, unless it delivers experimental predictions in its infancy, we must not pursue it. I think across science, we have to be permissive of research programs to mature before we ask for experimental evidence. So that would be my response.
All right, so I have lots of people anxious to ask a question. Raphael, please.
Yeah, so. There are many things that I'd like to say, I guess like David, but one thing that hasn't been mentioned is that physics is not complete. I mean, this house might be complete, but there's a lot of physics that we don't know yet, and more specifically, we don't know quantum gravity. To my mind, the most useful thing that quantum foundations would do for us would to give us a lead into the right approach to quantum gravity. It's when you come to a problem like that, it's not even clear to say that we know what quantum mechanics is. Personally, I think it's very unlikely that quantum gravity will be described by a Hilbert space, a vector in a Hilbert space, evolving to the Schrodinger equation, something like that. So that's one comment. Another comment has to do with the analogy that's been drawn with special relativity. So I think that the historical description people are giving, but this, I think that it, some of the comments made that we'll need a principle is based on a wrong understanding of what happened with special relativity and what the meaning of it is. And special relativity is not the right theory, right? It's a special, it's subsumed by general relativity. And general relativity is not given by a set of principles. Whether or not you thought special relativity was, I kind of agree with what Terry said on that. But general relativity most certainly is not. And what was it that led from special relativity to general relativity? It wasn't a set of, it wasn't a new principle. There were principles involved, definitely, in the discovery. But what led to it was the answer that I would give to why does the Lorentz contraction happen. It's not because of electromagnetic, that's not wrong. It's not because of Lorentz invariance, that's not wrong either. But it's really because of the interaction of that ruler or that object with the metric. What special relativity did was it revealed to us a new physical object or a new physical form of matter, which is the metric. Or if you like, it corrected the metric. There was this, perhaps a kind of Euclidean version, Newtonian version, but we understood that it was in a Lorentzian metric. And then making it dynamic is what led to general relativity. So I think if you want to really understand quantum mechanics, you want to understand what is it really about. I don't think we need a new principle to derive CHSH inequalities in some other way, but we need an understanding what it's about. And that's the other thing that now I'm like a broken record, or people have heard me say this before, but I think in light of the needs of quantum gravity and so on, I think it's very parochial and narrow-minded to just concentrate on non-relativistic quantum mechanics. One should not be saying, we'll just understand quantum mechanics in the landscape before we address the measurement problem. But one also shouldn't be saying, we'll understand non-relativistic quantum mechanics before we address the problems that are peculiar to quantum field theory and to quantum gravity. And if you think in those lines, I think you're led to say that what is quantum mechanics about? It's not about Hilbert spaces or something. It's about electrons and electromagnetic fields and so on. And I think the best way of describing those physically is as history. So that's the word that's the broken record. But I think much more attention needs to be given to what I would call histories-based formulations of quantum mechanics and not just wave function evolving in time, which personally I think in some sense doesn't even exist. But that was the second comment. And the third one, if I can still make it. Quickly. It's about, some people said that quantum mechanics is sort of just a theory of inference. But I would make a case that all of physics is a theory of inference. And that's what we're doing when we predict the location of Mars tomorrow or next week or something. We're using inferential laws. And so one shouldn't see that as sort of narrowing down the range of quantum. One should see it, rather, one should think of possibly broadening our notion of inference, even broadening our notion of logic, but just as part of physics. If you like, bringing logic and inference into contact with physics in the same way that relativity brought geometry into contact with physics. So here I think I'm echoing a little bit that Renato said. That was the sort of...
All right, thank you, Rafa. So what I'd like to do is actually, there's a few more questions from the audience and then give each of the panelists a few minutes to respond after that. So you just pick and choose what you'd like to address. So Bill, you've been waiting for a while.
Yeah, I always find the statement that we don't really understand quantum mechanics a little bit strange, because quantum mechanics was developed in a very, very specific situation, solving some very specific problems. And since that time, you know, spins came up. Virtually immediately, people figured out how to handle those within the context of their quantum theory, you know, which started off with, you know, harmonic oscillator with Heisenberg and hydrogen atom with Schrödinger. Then we got electromagnetic field and quantum field theory in general. It took, you know, a couple of years before people knew how to handle this.
And in fact, the whole transformation from quantum mechanics to quantum field theory, which occurred in the 1930s, et cetera, got done almost immediately. You know, this ability to take a theory which is developed in one particular place and just with absolute facility keep generalizing it to new places does not indicate a lack of understanding to me. I mean, that's an incredibly solid understanding that one has of the theory. A number of the, you know, alternatives, things like the collapse models and so forth, they go ahead and design them for one system, and then you add spins, and then you sit there for another 10, 15 years grinding away, and maybe we can get it to work here. And then quantum field theory, well, that's still another program that looks off somewhere in the future. You know, that facility just simply isn't there. So I think we understand quantum mechanics much better than some of the alternatives that David would, for example, ask us to jump on the bandwagon of. The other thing is, you know, if one is going to generalize quantum mechanics, as I said, and as Raphael just said, one wants to look at the place where one really is having trouble. And one of those places, at least, is in the whole area of quantum gravity. You know, what are the questions? Why are we having such an incredible difficulty in understanding it? I gave some suggestions in my talk. Raphael has given some suggestions here. Whether those are the right ones, we have no idea. But, you know, surely that's where we should be looking to try and see what the generalization is. If I think back to the 1900s as to the generalization of classical physics, if one were to take classical physics and, you know, take it as it had developed at 1900 and ask people, how will you generalize classical physics? It's almost certain that nobody would have come up with quantum mechanics. They weren't driven there by some sort of logical problems with classical physics, even though there were lots of logical problems with classical physics, but along a very different route and along and with an answer that absolutely and totally surprised and shocked and whatever everybody.
Thank you. Let me address a couple of things of what Bill said. On the other hand, when one looks at the history of classical mechanics, people were also very happy. The motion of all sorts of planets and moons were easily incorporated. And people kind of ignore for a long time, even after the development of electromagnetism, the problem that you didn't have stable atoms according to this theory. And it was put off and put off and put off until eventually people had to decide to face the black body radiation, and that's the start. It could have started much earlier if people had concentrated on this difficulty that there are no atoms in this theory. So perhaps we find ourselves in a similar situation. Quantum mechanics is undoubtedly an extremely successful theory. We know how to employ it in the lab very successfully. But when we try to withdraw ourselves from the lab, we start facing very serious questions, right? There is this measurement issue, which is the point that was raised by David, that is there. Without it, we cannot make any predictions. And when we try to say what is this? Well, nobody has a very clear understanding. So, having said that, let me say two points. I think on the one hand, it's not 100% correct to say that we have a finished house. We have perhaps some good foundations or grounds for schematics of how the house is, but it's not finished. I think the point by Raphael is an extremely important point.
I think it's not forming a house, it's a horse and carriage.
Well, it's a shack, perhaps. It's a shack. But it's something, still, it's in a building stage. It's not finished. This theory, where there is some progress on trying to make it relativistic, there is progress trying to deal with the violation of energy conservation. There are still many problems that need to be faced. But let me now go back to what Bill said. Regarding these issues of fundamental issues that are present there in quantum gravity, when we try to apply the theory in quantum mechanics to gravity, we face very serious difficulties. But perhaps thinking that these two things are disentangled, the foundational issues that affect that already are showing up by telling us quantum mechanics is not very easy to understand. And the issues, the very important issues
that trying to apply quantum mechanics to gravity may not be completely separate and decoupled. So let me give you an example. We've been thinking, for example, that the issue of time in quantum gravity may be resolved in part, or may be helped to be resolved in part by collapse theories. Because a foundational aspect of the problem of time in quantum gravity is the fact that when you slice space-time with different hypersurfaces, they may correspond to the same initial data and to the same space-time. And that's because you can give the data on any hypersurface. And quantum mechanics tells us two things that represent the same physics you should identify. This is the gauge, the diffeomorphism invariant that one face. But of course, these data are the same only if the evolution, the classical evolution, is the same. Once you start putting collapses, then the data on one hypersurface is not the same as the data in the final hypersurface. So perhaps collapses have something to do with the emergence of time. The other issue, black hole evaporation is a very important problem that black holes, you know, seem to, you start with a theory, quantum mechanics, you start with a theory that is, in principle, produces unitary evolution, but you put a black hole in, you get up this non-unitary. Very, very strange. But if we have collapses happening, and for some reason, which I don't claim to understand, collapse was enhanced when a black hole is created, or when a black hole is evaporated. Perhaps this effect that we're seeing at the large scale with black holes is a cumulative effect of many, many collapses happening when perhaps you are approaching a singularity. So perhaps a resolution of the issue of black hole evaporation, black unitarity, is connected intimately with these issues of collapse theories that are proposed to deal with a foundational issue. Right? These theories, all these theories have this as an intrinsic part. They are non-unitary. So,
I want to call out. You already had a comment, but is there anyone else who's desperate to make a comment? Yeah, you've been waiting.
So, John brought up the point of experimental verification of quantum mechanics and its Gaskell test. However, there quantum mechanics, conventional quantum mechanics, makes predictions that have not yet been tested. And it makes predictions that conflict with an alternative theory of quantum mechanics. For instance, conventional quantum mechanics predicts that a particle in free space will vibrate with a very high frequency, which violates Newton's laws. There are alternative theories that predict no such vibration, yet give all the other predictions of quantum mechanics. So it is experimentally falsifiable.
Could you expand on that?
Well, then I'll leave that for a dinner discussion. That's
sure.
Also more technical. John, was it a quick comment?
Quick comment.
Okay.
Having published papers in quantum mechanics, quantum gravity, there are no experimental data in quantum gravity. And one of the frustrations I have when I get to section at the end is I cannot test my theory. And 67 other people have quantum gravity theories, which all disagree with me because they think they're better. But there's no way of testing quantum gravity.
Okay. So I think I'd like to conclude with the question part and give these panelists to respond. I kind of tend to give Rob the last word. Jerry, are you ready to go?
Okay, so I'll just use 1 minute to disappoint David even further. here's the thing. Like, those finished houses, I think, are plausible descriptions of a world in which instead of just full quantum mechanics, we had only the Gaussian subset of quantum mechanics. So this is where wave functions are all e to the minus x squared, where the Hamiltonians are quadratic in x and p. And that's a closed sort of universe within quantum mechanics. And when I write it in field space, I see entanglement, the original EPR split, delta x1 minus x2, delta p1 plus p2. That's in here. The whole EPR paradox, position measurement, position and momentum measurements are in there. Von Neumann's measurement, version of the measurement problem. You know, my Hamiltonian is x dot p, that's in there. Pretty much every single thing, in fact, of the three finished houses I think you have in mind, Bohmian mechanics, Everettian type things, and collapse models, two of them are pretty bad. So In fact, they could have come up with those interpretations, and perhaps models could have come up to explain just Gaussian Hilbert space quantum mechanics. And yet, and then, you know, many of the sort of paradoxes of quantum mechanics, uncertainty principle, everything's in there. And yet, someone comes along and says, you've just been fooled by Hilbert space. Look, go to the Wigner function, and I'll give you an explanation, an actual explanation, which I don't need any of that. And so how do we know that there isn't some other explanation where I go away from Hilbert space for the whole of quantum mechanics and get a natural
explanation? I mean, let me just respond very briefly. Thinking back on what I said before, you know, it sounds as if I was in the business, you know, nobody should be in the business of discouraging any research programs. And I don't want to sound like that. If you guys come up with a car in a couple of years and all we've got is a horse and carriage, that would be great. And everybody is going to welcome that. I was just looking.
It's not these guys. It's the people that are building quantum mechanics, computers.
I was just looking to be disabused of mistakes that I might be making that might motivate people to turn away from these other programs that look like they're working well.
Taking an object view of the quantum state. The notion you need to be abused of.
Because it's produced some kind of insurmountable problem?
Yes.
Which one?
The relative inelegance of those alternatives to the epistemic.
So look, this is the beginning of a long discussion, which I agree we should postpone till later, although I hope we'll have it at some point. But look, I just didn't mean, sure, if stuff comes out of this that eventually constitutes better, clearer, more satisfying, more empirically adequate, you know, accounts of the world than we presently have, everybody who has a shred of intellectual honesty to them should applaud that. Of course that's the case. I was just wondering if there were motivations here, and it seemed like there ought to be motivations of a different sort that involve the critique of the proposed answers that are now sitting on the table in much more finished form.
My critique is they look weird, and they look weird because they reify Hilbert space.
I'll tell a tiny little anecdote, and then I'll shut up. Here's a story that Bohm used to tell. Okay, seems to me, you know, a very compelling story. Bohm said, "Look, what if the historical sequence had been reversed? My theory had been discovered first, and then along comes Bohr, and he says, 'You know what? I've got a way of saving the symmetry between position and momentum that gets destroyed by Bohm's theory, and so on and so forth. All you got to do is give up the business of thinking that physics is aiming at a realistic description of the external world.'" Okay, Bohm said, I think rightly, Bohr would have been laughed out of the room. Okay, Bohr would have been told, "You got to get your priorities straight. Okay, you're more devoted to the symmetry between position and momentum than you are to the existence of a scientifically realist description of the external world. Something's crazy there." Okay. I just wanted to probe that a little more. It goes without saying, you guys get a good theory.
I'm a realist, but Bohmian description of this is non-local, and yet I know there's a local realistic theory for this subset of quantum mechanics. So it's quite.
Which,
you know,
theory is that? You mean there's a mistake
all
in Bell's
theory? So if I take all Gaussian states and quadratic Hamiltonians, the bigger function gives me a local realistic theory. And yet, the Bohmian description, the quantum potential is non-zero for those Gaussian states. So it's
I'm sorry, these are single particle states or multiple particle states? You mean, is there a mistake in Bell's theorem?
No, I'm just saying the Bohmian version of Gaussian quantum mechanics is non-local.
And so, and according to Bell's...
And here I know that there is
wait,
a local
So there must be a mistake in Bell's theorem. The upshot of Bell's theorem...
Bell's theorem
is not
in the Gaussian
subset.
No. Bell's theorem is just about reproducing experimental results.
I can add a clarificatory thing. He's talking about the restriction to the set of states where the Wigner distribution is positive, and Bell in the paper, EPR state and EPW, whatever, the thing where he's talking about the Wigner, showed that for that subset of states, you don't get violations
But why is this of any interest?
So anyway, so Kamaral was talking about applying dimensional analogy to this paper by Rob and Terry and Steve, Terry is referencing. But let's continue with the panel discussion, and Renato, is this your chance to
right.
Any comments?
Right. Yeah, let me just, because you already promised not to answer or to shut up, let me say something. So you just brought this anecdote, that this anecdote actually convinces me that I don't want to move into this house that is built. So why should I move into a house that was built first, particularly if aesthetically I don't like it? So as a physicist, I want to see the range of all possible houses and then decide which one is the best, and then move into that. So if I moved into one, that would just be no argument of my research program. So I think what we, or most of us at least, are trying to do is to somehow explore the space of houses.
You'll get no argument
from me. Whether they're consistent or not, that's what justifies, I think, this fashion research.
Sure.
But then, because I think we're supposed to give answer to, let me just answer one thing that was mentioned about the quantum theory. That quantum theory, of course, makes very good predictions. But my simple answer to why we are not completely happy with that is that there's very simple experiments where it doesn't give a prediction at all. This was already mentioned, but if I just have an experiment, introduce my focus, then the other experiment with equally likely outputs, quantum theory doesn't tell me anything about which output I will get if I have a certain superposition of states. In that case, quantum theory doesn't add anything to the knowledge I had about the outcome if I didn't even have a theory at all. So there are situations where quantum theory doesn't give a prediction. That's one reason why one could ask whether there's a generalization. This is just to answer your question why one is possibly interested in generalization, despite the fact that it gives very accurate predictions. It gives very accurate predictions, but it also, for certain experiments, doesn't give a prediction at all.
I think it's not so theorist to produce an experiment that says it's clear, it doesn't clear. Einstein always said that again. It's general relativity, he produced extension special relativity. He produced the way to test it, his paper, and so forth. And this is what I find is lacking in quantum transition theory. No one tells me the experiment where I go out and actually check what interpretation is better than the other.
That's not quite fair. In fact, spent most of his talk this morning.
And so did Angelo yesterday.
And people are working towards that.
I just brought up an example.
So if I could ask your attention for Dan's comments.
I would not be not surprised if we can even prove up to some assumptions that no experiment can contradict quantum mechanics at some point. And that's not the end of physics. I also disagree on some statement there. You mentioned that quantum mechanics is about electrons. Well, general relativity is about space-time. But as Bill mentioned, you have quantum mechanics before you discover the spin. And that's actually one of the points. You are discovering, we have basically 50 more years of discovering particles, fields, and everything matches with quantum mechanics. And this is kind of the clue that quantum mechanics is not about electrons, dark matter, whatever, but everything fits.
What's it about?
My point is that
it's not about electrons, it's not about space-time.
Oh, it's about our belief in the behavior of Anyway.
It's a theory of our belief.
Yeah, thanks. About
we have to get to
well, yeah, yeah. No, sorry, I said that. And regarding the anecdote. Okay. In your situation, bomb versus war, instead of going to balance something, I would just focus on the hydrogen atom. And then I don't like the bombing description of it.
I didn't think that science was supposed to proceed by what we like.
No,
I thought it was a matter
of figuring
out what
we like. Are you really happy with that?
How short is it? Extremely short. Extremely short. I think there is an important issue about quantum mechanics. We think, we say, yes, it is a fantastic theory, it fits everywhere, and it allows us to put fields, relativity, and all sorts of things, and everything works fine. There is a very interesting article I recommend everybody to read. I was very impressed by that article, written by Raphael Sorkin, that's called Impossible Measurements in Quantum Field Theory. What it says is that if you extrapolate the postulates of quantum mechanics, including, in fact, that every Hermitian operator is measurable, then you can show that you can send signals faster than light. So it shows very clearly that the postulates of quantum mechanics, as they are known in any group, cannot be extrapolated to quantum field theory. You will need something else. So the theory is not as successful as sometimes it's going to be.
What if I get disaster with the Opfer experiment?
All right, so Rob, you get the final word.
Final word. So I don't want to enter into this debate again, but let me just say the horse and carriage analogy was not meant to denigrate the collapse theories or Everett or Bohm, but just to point out that when deciding between two research programs, A and B, the decision is not always based on a critique of one. It can be based on the fact that another looks really good, and that was
sure.
My point.
Sure.
So I just wanted to come back to sort of point this come up a few times from the audience. So. It seems to me there's sort of a dichotomy of views on whether it's more likely to be fruitful to first generalize quantum theory and then seek to understand what you get, or first understand quantum theory and then seek to generalize it. So, for example, from Raphael and Bill, I interpreted some of their comments as, look, if we first generalize quantum theory to incorporate gravity, that will be the time at which it'll be possible to understand quantum theory. And so we should busy ourselves with that project and maybe postpone the project of understanding it until that time. You know, stop thinking about trying to understand non-relativistic quantum mechanics and focus on this other thing. Whereas, you know, the comments I made and some of the other comments on the panel were more, you know, the other way around, that we can understand quantum theory, and once we've done that, we can hope to generalize it. So I think I think both of those approaches are fruitful. So I wouldn't want to tell anyone, you know, not to follow the approach Raphael was recommending. But maybe I'll just make one comment about, you know, why I think the understand then generalize program has a lot of merit. When I look at what's confusing about quantum theory, it seems to me it's stuff that's common to non-relativistic and relativistic versions of the theory. So whether I'm talking about quantum mechanics of particles or fields or strings or what have you, I've got a state space which is a Hilbert space. It's defined over the complex field. Independent systems combined by tensor product. These, to my mind, are all facts that we need to understand, we need reasons for. And they're not facts that are particular to non-relativistic quantum mechanics. So for that reason, it seems to me that we may as well study the simplest version of quantum theory if we want to understand those facts. And in fact, the quantum information sort of flavor of this is, well, forget even about non-relativistic quantum mechanics. Let's focus on some two-level systems and see if we can understand it there. And I think I'll leave it at that.
All right, great. Well, this was a lot of fun. Thanks, everyone, for your participation.